Those who are new to the Florida community of mindfulness, while we have these, like today or the different activities during the week, open to everybody, anybody can come, there's a Donna Bowl, there's no charge, et cetera. We are also a community, and we're a community of several hundred members who also participate in various kinds of activities to deepen their spiritual life and their healing and transformation. And one of the major things that we do in our community is we do these intensives, 3 and 6 months intensive periods of study and practice that people are involved in. But they work and have families, are doing all their usual stuff, but it's a very focused kind of intention of study and practice and meetings and stuff like that. And starting tomorrow, we have about maybe 120 people involved in these two intensives that are dealing with mindfulness, but in the way that the Buddha taught. And in the Buddhist tradition, there are these two sutras, and sutras are these written teachings that are purported that the Buddha gave. So they are over 2,600 years old. One is called the Anapanasati, or the Full Awareness of the Breath Sutra, and the other is the Satipatthana, which is the Four Establishments of Mindfulness. So these are the two fundamental texts in which the Buddha presented mindfulness in the context that he meant it to be presented. And over these coming months, in a lot of the Dharma talks and sharing, the context will be what's unfolding in these sutras. And again, I did, when I was here last, give a talk on that. But I wanted to continue by saying a few things. One thing I think that is very important, that is not clear, or could not be clear, is that in the Buddhist tradition, the kind of training that a practitioner undergoes in terms of their healing and transformation, their awakening, involves three major aspects. They're often in the Sanskrit is shila, samadhi, and prajna. What this means in English, to those of us who are not Sanskrit scholars, it has to do with action. It has to do with mindfulness and concentration, samadhi, and it has to do with the cultivation of wisdom and insight. So if you are someone who is following the Buddhist path of living, one is attentive to the actions of one's body, speech, and mind. One is cultivating the mind to develop mindfulness and stability and groundedness and an integratedness of mind. And as one is developing wisdom, wisdom means there's understanding. I understand what's going on here in life. I understand what's going on within my own body, mind. And because I have understanding of how things really are and how things aren't really aren't, I am able to act in an intelligent way in life, in a skillful way in life. And therefore, when I am doing that, I am no longer supporting or nurturing or cultivating any types of wrong or harmful or delusive kind of thinking or acting or speaking in my life at all. Actually, I would be trying to do the opposite. That in all the actions of my body, speech, and mind, it is only for the good. And not like the big good, but also the good of that situation, of that person or people or situation that I'm dealing with, right? And so this transformation to get to that place where that way of being in life is natural, spontaneous, we have to go through some training. Or in truth, we have to go through retraining. Because most of us have already been trained up. Right? But we don't know it. We've been trained up by our families of origin. You know, many of us, we spent 6 or 18 years there, right? And they trained us up. And you know, each of us has to decide what we think about that training, okay, and what they were training us up in, all right? But please understand, we were trained up, okay? And we were trained up by our education system. We were trained up by our mentors. We were trained up by our neighborhoods. We were trained up by our culture. You know, we were trained up by our religion. We've been trained. You know, we didn't get where we are right now without receiving a lot of training. It was just never called that, and we never knew it. Okay? But that's the truth. But when one embarks upon a spiritual path of transformation, it means, oh, I understand that. That the way I am now, the thoughts that are rising in my mind, my emotional life, the way I deal with life, the way I speak, and all that, that has been produced by this training I received in life. Right? And if one stops and looks at that and goes, you know, I don't know about all that because look where it got me. Okay? So one enters a spiritual path primarily to be retrained, but hopefully retrained now very consciously in the direction we want to go in our life. You see? Because the retraining we've received up until now, we weren't aware that we were learning how to be and fulfill somebody else's issues, somebody else's agendas, etc. Now, you know, where do I want to go in my life? What kind of person do I want to be? And therefore, what sort of training do I need to receive to go through so I can be that kind of person and live that kind of life? Okay, so again, coming back to Buddhism, there is this training in conduct, there is this training in meditation, and this is training in cultivating wisdom. Now again, in the teachings, in the sutras, they are primarily about the training in mindfulness and concentration, and somewhat the development of wisdom and insight. Okay, but I just want to say that while conduct, Shila, right action, ethics, we might say, you know, different things, is not overtly mentioned. It is understood, okay? Because everybody in the Buddhist tradition has already gotten that training, right? So it's not mentioned here, so that's why I'm mentioning it, because it is understood by everybody who was receiving this teaching by the Buddhas and in Buddhist cultures. Because it is considered, why do we often have very unstable minds? Why do we have so much emotional ups and downs in our minds? Okay. Why do we find that so many, not only of our thoughts and feelings, but the words we speak and the actions we do with our body create negative results or create conflict or create disharmony? Right? Okay. So we need to really be attentive to that, the fact that, you know, just jumping into meditation, just jumping into mindfulness practice without really looking at how I am conducting my life and my relationships and my interactions with people. And we interact with the world primarily through what? Through our physical actions and through our words. Right? So the training in Shila, the training in we might ethics or right action or morality or whatever we want to call it, has to do with taking a deep look at, you know, what am I creating in my life, and is this what is keeping my mind agitated? You see, and if it's keeping my life agitated because my relationships are in conflict, my work relationships are in conflict, you know what I'm saying? Or I'm, you know, or I'm abusing substances, or I'm, you know, a shopaholic, or I'm addicted to the internet, or addicted to pornography, you know what I mean? All these things we may be doing, or, you know, that this is affecting my mind. And if I don't attend to these actions of how I am in the world, I can practice mindfulness, I can practice meditation, I can be cultivating wisdom and doing all the right stuff, and yet the transformation does not occur because the stability isn't there. And the stability isn't there because I am still, in Buddhism we call it karma. I am still creating this conflictual, inharmonious, negativity-producing way of being in the world, in the actions of my body, speech, and mind. So kind of we have to get that straight. We have to be attentive to that. Because again, when one is living in harmony with others, when one's actions of body, speech, and mind are contributing to goodness and harmony in all our actions, our minds will be at ease. If our minds are at ease, when we come to our sitting meditation, we will find that it's much easier to calm and quiet the mind. But if our minds are still always riled up with resentments and hurts and angers and fears and worries and regrets and disappointments because of the conflictual way we are living life, you know, we'll be spending all our meditation doing what? Obsessing, internal dialogue, roiling about in our dramas. Everybody know what I'm talking about? Come on. Everybody know what I'm talking about? Okay. I just make sure I'm not the only one. Okay. But could you imagine what if you weren't, if your daily life was not involved with dramas? And then when you came to sit, there weren't all these dramas to be obsessed about. Right? Can you imagine how that might be? And how much easier it would to be cultivate mindfulness and concentration, the absence of all these dramas, which are the residue of often the way we are conducting our life. So again, I just want to go on record to say that even though for those who are involved in the in these intensives on these two sutras going forward, and for anybody else to please understand that even though we are the Florida Community of Mindfulness, and you come in here and we just sit down and we practice mindfulness and meditation, that this other piece in our life we need to be attentive to. The actions of our body, speech, and mind, and what are their effects? What are their effects on others, and what are their effects on me? Are there any questions about that? That's not clear. Please, if you have any questions. And again, in the Buddha's teachings on right action, the five mindfulness trainings, the precepts, the ten, I mean, there's lots of very specific teachings about how to conduct oneself in a way that ceases to do harm to oneself and to others. And this is very important. And it's important for the world. It's important for others. So we... attending to right actions is probably the most overt way that we can begin to make a difference in this world. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh wrote a whole book on the right action, ethics, the mindfulness trainings, this section of Buddhist teachings. And he called the book For a Future to be Possible. Very interesting. For a Future to be Possible. You know why, when we look around this world and we may despair, because of the continuance of violence and war, human beings harming one another, hurting one another, you know, violence in our own culture, country, in all ways and forms. We look at the lack of generosity in the world. We look at the way people speak to one another. I mean, right now in our, I mean, this is a, I don't know if everybody knows this, but there's a presidential race going on. I mean, if you just listen to the quality of the speech and what people say to one another, right? So it's like that. Can you see? It's like that. Addiction, alcohol, drugs, prescription drugs. I mean, so many of the things that are the toxic elements in our culture have to do with conduct, have to do with action. And if people, whether they never cross their legs, whether they never learn mindfulness and concentration and insight, if they just kind of shaped up in terms of the way they act and speak to one another, we could have a very different world and very different culture just by that. Again, he called it For a Future to be Possible. So again, any questions? Yes.
I appreciate you speaking to the political kind of atmosphere right now. For me personally, where I tend to struggle with it is with our kids being 11 and 12 and really questioning when they watch the language that's used,
no.
The anger. You'll say things like, you know, these are adults that are president and
Yeah.
Just that, you know, as an adult, as a parent, then being able to have that conversation, sometimes it's really difficult for me to be able to kind of maintain that. It's difficult sometimes, too.
Difficult in what way?
Well, just because there's such, I mean, I agree with them. I think that it is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and So then I don't really have answers for that. I'm not really sure I quite understand it either. So it's, you know, to kind of when you're talking about kind of taking a look at, you know, internally what's coming up for you when you're watching that, and to be able to kind of keep yourself to not get caught up in all of that, all of a sudden where I'm then being kind of wild.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
And then, you know, I'm trying to. Very concerned and actually kind of scared about it.
Yeah, I don't blame them. Right? I don't blame them. I mean, it's a hell of a world we're giving our children. I mean, today we have our family program. Soon the children will be coming in. Yeah, that's the truth. Right? And, you know, this is, I think, unfortunately, the way it's, I mean, it's obviously changing, but, I mean, one generation does pass on the world to the next, and it's always not a great gift. And I think for our children, I mean, I have children, I have grandchildren. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we didn't grow up with this kind of stuff going on in our country and with people talking about, you know, global warming, the extinction of species. You know what I mean? This is, yeah, this is the world. And I think it's important that we, you know, because this is the world they're going into. And when your kids are, you know, 11, 12, 13, they're much more conscious of that. You know, so I think obviously when they're 4 or 5 or 6, you want to hold them back from seeing this kind of stuff because their minds aren't ready to deal with it or even understand it. But obviously, at you know, when they get to be 10, 11, 12, 13, this is their world. And they'll be dealing with it. And so we want to help to prepare them. And so I think... you know, kind of the simple thing of just, yeah. I mean, when the children hear that stuff and they go, oh, they're so mean to one another, and the things they say to one another, and you say, yeah, terrible, isn't it? I mean, isn't it just terrible the way people talk to one another, lack of respect, wanting to do harm with their words, you know, not wanting to be in any way constructive? Yeah, I think we should use what's going on in the world as a way to teach our children, you know, to acknowledge the truth of what they see, but at the same time show them there is another way. I mean, that's why we practice, to find another way, right? There is another way to speak, right? There is another way when we disagree with somebody to not let that descend into, you know, that kind of name-calling or character assassination, you know. And there are real issues that our world and country faces that can be dealt with in an intelligent, insightful way. And this is not how you do it. Yeah, so again, I don't think, especially when our kids become preteens or teens, I think, you know, that kind of protective bubble we might have put around them when they were younger, you know, we want to put as strongly around. Because they'll be dealing with stuff, right? And we know that kids in middle school, you know, high school, are dealing with stuff, right? Beside the stuff they're going to see on the TV. And certainly we enjoy the purity of our children in a certain way. But at the same time, we want to develop their capacity to be in this world that is impure, so they can be of benefit. So, which is the same thing we want to do, right? I mean, the teachings we receive here is not go home and hide, stay on, you know, get on your cushion and don't leave it, right? The teaching is, yeah, we're here to develop, you know, insight and understanding and mindfulness. So when we enter the world of relationships, the world of work, the world of our neighborhoods, the worlds of our culture, the worlds of society, you know, we can enact in a, quote, awakened way, which means a way that has understanding and insight and compassion and intelligence, clear-sighted, and, right? So, you know, please use those opportunities to teach. We call those teaching moments. So that's a teaching moment. If you're exposing them, you know, if you're exposing them to the political debates, or you know what I'm saying, then these are teach. You know, use those as teaching moments to help them make sense of it. Because and to let them know there is another way, and hopefully. You and your husband are modeling another way, right? And you're teaching your children another way, that one can have disagreements, one can have differing viewpoints, and it doesn't have to descend to such anger and name-calling and slander and, you know, all the stuff that people are doing. Okay? So today is family program, and they're coming in at 11:45. Good, so we have a few minutes. Let me just... There is an interesting thing that I just wanted to share with you. And this is, again, these two sutras are very short sutras. You may want to take a look at them. The sutra on the full awareness of breathing, and the second one is the Satipatthana, or the... before the Buddha begins his teaching, I mean, there's a storyline in most of the sutras because these are happening in real life. And so often in Buddhist sutras, there's kind of a setting and dialogue and things that are going on between the Buddha and his disciples that are he's going to be teaching before he begins the teaching. And there's a whole kind of drama here with the Buddha and his monks and what's going on with them and all that. He says, O bhikkhus, and so these are the bhikkhus, are these ordained monks. Our community is pure and good. At its heart, it is without useless and boastful talk. and therefore it deserves to receive offerings and be considered a field of merit. Such a community is rare, and any pilgrim who seeks it, no matter how far he must travel, will find it worthy. So I think, you know, we call ourselves the Florida Community of Mindfulness. We call ourselves a community. We are doing our best to create a community. And I would say it is instructive that he says our community is pure and good. At its heart, it is without useless and boastful talk. I think those are important words for those of us who are building communities, who want to build communities. And again, families are communities, right? In a certain way, places of work could be seen as communities, right? And we want to create communities, whether it's a community of two or a community of 200 or 2,000, that is pure. Pure means it's not contaminated. Pure gold is different than fool's gold because it is totally gold. It has no impurities. It has no contaminations. In Buddhism, when we say pure, we mean it is pure that only that people are only putting forth those types of emotions, those types of speech, those types of actions, which are only altruistic. They're only for the good. We seek the good of everyone in our community. We seek the good of ourselves, and all our actions are in support of that. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody in the community is a fully enlightened Buddha. Make that understood, okay? It doesn't mean that the people in a community that want to create a community that lives in purity and harmony doesn't have their stuff, right? Doesn't have their inner Donald Trump, or their inner Hillary Clinton or whatever they want to say that wants to come out, but in a community that has its goal of wanting to live in purity and goodness, it knows how to, and this comes back to the debates, you know, it knows how to take care of that inner Trump or inner Hillary. Okay? It knows how to take care of it and transform it. So it's not as if a community that lives in harmony and awareness and purity and goodness is acting. You know, many of you might have been around communities or people like that where people act right, but inside, watch out. Or behind the scenes, watch out. So that's not what I'm talking about, right? A real community that wants to live in harmony and awareness, a real family, a real couple that want to live in that way, have that as their goal, that as their intention. But they also are aware of all the impurities, and they know how to deal with them, how to take care of them, and how to heal and transform them so they don't erupt and cause suffering and pain. So even a harmony that wants to live in purity and goodness acknowledges the impurities, acknowledges the tendencies that aren't good. It's not like they have to be hidden or repressed or denied, but they are fully acknowledged. One is mindful of, and therefore, whether it's within oneself or even in relationship, that when disharmony may break out, or conflict may break out, or the impurities may come forward, the individuals and the community as a whole knows how to deal with it, right? So it doesn't fester, it doesn't foister, it doesn't contaminate. Is that clear? And very quickly, then the Buddha describes his community. This is before he begins teaching. He says, oh, bhikkhus, in this assembly, this is this whole group of people who've gathered for his teaching, there are those who've realized the fruit of our hardship, destroyed every root of affliction, laid aside every burden, attained right understanding, emancipation. There are also those who have cut off the first five internal formations and realized the fruit of never returning to the cycle of birth and death. Those who have thrown off the three internal formations and realized the fruit of returning once more, they have cut off the roots of greed, hatred, ignorance, and only need to return to the cycle of birth and death one more time. And then there are those who have thrown off the three internal formations and have attained the fruit of stream enterer, coursing steadily to the awakened mind. So let me just say something about that. I think this is very important for us to understand. And people have been around have heard me say, in Western psychology is based on what's called psychopathology, the diseases of the mind, right? And the therapeutic interventions are to control and remediate and cope better with those afflictions, okay, of self. Buddhism, and here I'm talking about as a psychological system, has a model of what it really means to be a healthy human being. And this is important to understand, right? So when the Buddha talks about these four types of human beings, just like us, and he gives them different names, you know, the stream enterers, the once returners, the arhats, etc., that, and he clearly delineates that certain processes that we think are normal are no longer active in this person. It gives us here a knowledge that this path is very, it's a developmental path, and if we follow it, we will come to certain types of realizations and freedoms that will produce a very different mind. Things that we accept as normal will be absent in our minds. There will be a cessation of. And this is very hard. I say that, in our culture, we don't, really get that, right? That there is this path to awakening. There is this path to cultivating a different mind, and these C trainings that I talked about are the means of doing that. And I just want to just talk briefly, because I think this is, for many of us, this is where we'd like to get to, the stream enterer, the first one, right? You know, in Buddhism, we talk about the Sangha. People have heard the word Sangha. We refer to that as the Buddhist community, the Sangha, the fourfold Sangha, monks and nuns, laymen and lay people. This is the Buddhist fourfold Sangha. Well, what people don't know is in Buddhism, there's also something that goes back to the time of the Buddha called the Arya Sangha, the higher Sangha. And the Arya Sangha is what the Buddha is talking about. People, it doesn't, and this is not about monk or nun or layman or laywoman or anything like that. This is about realization. So the Arya Sangha is really the awakened Sangha. Those people who have freed themselves from their delusions, right? Now, and he really clearly delineates at each stage what has happened. What are the key insights? And for the stream enterer, he said, the stream enterer is free from identity view, attachment to rites and rituals, and doubt about the teachings. So what does this mean for us? It means as a practitioner of a path to be... Does that mean anything? Ding. And yeah, it means probably I have 2 minutes left. I can see that. So this is important because it clearly says, Because a stream enterer is the way I've always seen it in a very personal way, is, you know, up to a certain point we're forging ahead in our practice by our will. We're struggling, we want to get somewhere, we want to get away from our suffering, we want to get to a better life, we want to get to, you know what I mean? There's this kind of struggle, there's always having to push ourselves, right? Oh, I really don't want to sit, but it's probably good for me, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. To be a stream enterer, to enter the stream, it means there is now this energy. It's like, you know, you've been carrying the canoe or the kayak for a number of miles, and you finally get to the river, and you put it in. And now the current of the river will take you. Doesn't mean you still don't have to steer, right? But there's this energy that's carrying you. There's no longer a struggle. That's a stream enterer. Now, why does a stream enterer, what have they accomplished, he or she? They're free from, most importantly, this perception and identification as themselves, as a separate self. That I am just this ego, this me. One has seen into the unreality of that, and that has freed one to enter into the stream of all beings, the stream of life, the stream of interconnection, the stream of non-separation. Right? That's no longer, you're no longer struggling with your ego and all its commands. That has ended. Okay? That's the big one. And it's not just intellectual, it's direct experience. Attachment to rites and rituals means that practice is no longer external. It's no longer about doing this and that. It's now internal. It's within us. Okay? And there's no more any doubt. Right? You know, until you get to the river, you're just hacking through things, and you go, you know, I get this map, they say there's a river there, but God, you know? You know what I mean? You're now in the river. No more doubts. You know, the truth of the teaching, the truth of the practice, is there's no more any question. You know it's all true. Okay? So the mind has no doubt, the mind has no identification with self and identity and the stories of self, and one is practicing from the inside. Is that clear? So that's a stream enterer. So that's our goal. I understand it's realizable in one lifetime. Now there are more profound states also that are available to us, but that's enough for today.